Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, July 18th, 2022. As always, I'm grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website, thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. And the website is whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And those files can serve as a tutorial for you if you don't have the inclination or ability to call the internet show and get live support for doing a worksheet. That's an excellent way to develop the skills and build facility for getting the most out of that tool. You can also go to your App Store, Google Play, or the Apple App Store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. That app will contain the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. If you have questions or comments and you'd like to or testimonials, and you'd like to share them with us, but you can't be on the call live, you can email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. If you're able to join us live and you've got questions or comments or testimonials or a request for support in using one of the tools, you can call us live at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And we appreciate whenever anybody does that. It makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And the intention of the radio show, the intention of the website, the intention of the support groups is to be of service. And it's easier for us to be of service when we hear directly from you about comments or questions, issues you might be struggling with, successes you had, answers you've discovered, either by doing some of the readings or working directly with the tools. So if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1 on your phone. I will get back into looking at the Way of Mastery here shortly, and I like to remind people that even if I'm in the middle of talking about the Way of Mastery, feel free to call and raise a hand. Press 1 on your phone. I will either instantaneously turn on the phone or the microphone for you, or wait until it seems to me to be a good time in the flow of the show and don't be shy. Let us know what you're thinking and or if you've got questions or comments or answers or even you want to refute something that we're observing. All those kinds of comments and questions and answers are welcome. I have been busy over the weekend looking at a few things, a few different writings, and I saw that somebody posted this on Facebook. I've shared this before, but I want to highlight this and read this and how important it is for us to be able, be willing to observe directly that we really don't know much of anything. And what we think we know, we're making up, and we're, you know, if we're scientifically minded, we're trying it out, and we're willing to be shown that we're wrong. We're willing to learn. We're open to learning something new. But this is a post that talks about why it's important for us to stay open to learning. It says, before you judge others or claim any absolute truth, consider this. If you're a human being, you see less than 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum. If you're a human being, you hear less than 1% of the acoustic spectrum. As you are hearing this, you're traveling at 220 kilometers per second across the galaxy. 90% of the cells in your body carry their own microbial DNA and are not technically part of you. The atoms in your body are 99.9999999% empty space, and none of them are the ones you were born with. But they all originated in the belly of a star. Human beings have 46 chromosomes. There just happens to be two less than the common potato. The existence of the rainbow depends on the conical photoreceptors in your eyes. To animals without cones, the rainbow doesn't exist. So you don't just look at a rainbow. You create the experience of the rainbow. This is pretty amazing, especially considering that all the beautiful colors you see represent less than 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum. Now, we've talked about it in various ways, but this is to my eye and ear, a rather succinct representation of it. And, you know, not only do your senses pick up less than 1% of the light and 1% of the acoustic spectrum, but you are only able to be aware of a tiny fraction of whatever your senses register. And great spiritual traditions and teachings, whether it's the Course in Miracles or the Way of Mastery or Michael Rice's work or Byron Katie's work, they all share this theme of understanding how little we actually know. They all share the idea that whenever we create a sense of certainty, it's from a very, very limited perspective. And the fact of the matter is that whatever it is we think we know is either only partially true and perhaps even completely false. So, think about choosing to learn or to live more in the question. Think about the benefit of staying open and living from observation rather than churning back into the conditioned belief that you're right and the people around you are wrong. And if you've been trying that for a while and you're having trouble with it or success with it, I'd be happy to hear your comments, your experience with that. And there was also a... Susan Bingham was talking about viewing some of the Webb telescope images. And there's a wonderful YouTube video where they've compiled lots of different images from NASA, and they've added in the James Webb telescope most recent images of the Southern Ring Nebula. And so if you go to YouTube and search for the Southern Ring Nebula NASA Image Webb Space Telescope, it's amazing. And it's not very long. It's only about a minute long. And it has you basically, you know, as though you're on our planet looking up through the Milky Way, which is the side angle of our galaxy, and then looking through that and zooming out. And, of course, there are, you know, trillions of stars out there, and you're going past them. And then all of a sudden there's a dot that grows larger and larger in the field of view. And it's getting fuzzier and fuzzier because they're using images from Hubble and things like that. And then all of a sudden, they start presenting the images that they got from the Webb telescope. And you get to see this nebula. And just so you try to wrap your mind around this, a nebula is a dust cloud or gas and dust cloud that is so vast that it is the birthplace of stars. So, you know, one of my favorite lyrics from a movie, I'll get to that in a minute. 847, you're in the air. Is this Mary? Maybe that was an accidental hand raising. I will go ahead and close off the microphone, and if you want, put your hand down and then back up again. There was a movie, a little animated movie called The Point, and it was Harry Nilsson provided the music for it. And it's a lovely little animated video about the fact that everybody has a point, even though we as people start to judge that those people aren't like us, and so they can't be right, and they can't, and if you don't have a point on the top of your head, then you're not worthy, etc. But one of the songs in that, as they're telling the story, this little boy and his dog got banished to the pointless forest because he had the misfortune or fortune, however you want to look at it, of being born without a point on the top of his head, and everybody else in the land of point had a point on the top of their head. All the trees had points. All the buildings had points. All the people had points. All the animals had points on the top of their head. And Oblio was born without a pointy head. So his mother knitted him a pointed cap to try to conceal his pointless condition. And Oblio ran afoul of the evil count's kid and beat him in a game of triangle toss. And so Oblio was called in front of the town council, and they said, well, wait a minute, we have a law here that says you have to have a point or you can't be here. And they banished him from the town. So he was banished to the pointless forest. And as the story goes, the distance between the land of point and the pointless forest is directly proportional to the amount of time it takes to sing a song. And this is the song, more spoken than sung. Sit beside the breakfast table and think about your troubles. Pour yourself a cup of tea and think about the bubbles. You can take a teardrop and drop it in a teacup, take it down to the riverside and throw it over the side, where it's swept up by a current and taken to an ocean, where it's eaten by some fishes who are eaten by some fishes who are swallowed by a whale who grows so old he decomposes. And then the sea does what it oughta, and soon there's salty water, which is not too good for drinking, so they run it through a filter, and it comes out of a faucet, and it pours into a teapot, which is just about to bubble. So now, think about your troubles. That's the image that came to mind when I watched the Southern Cross Nebula, or whatever it's called, and the images from the Webb Telescope. We are doing what we do on this globe spinning through our galaxy, which is one of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of galaxies, and each galaxy has millions, if not billions, of stars. You get the point. But we think that when somebody cuts us off in traffic, that's really important. We think if somebody doesn't respond to our email right away, that is worth getting angry about, or sad, or scared, or offended about. And if you're stepping into the use of these tools, and one of the tools that is being suggested here in the Way of Mastery is the simple act of observing how little you know about even the objects in your environment. If there's a park bench, you don't know who had the first idea for a park bench. You don't know where the material came from to make it. If it was a tree, you don't know where that tree was grown or what type of tree it is, most likely. If it's some kind of artificial substance. You don't know what that's made of or where the ingredients for it came from. So these great spiritual teachings are trying to rescue us or give us a way to rescue ourselves from the idiotic notion that we know that we're right and someone else is wrong. And the more we rehearse and practice and learn to get comfortable in the living in the question, the more we open the space for ourselves to learn, to discover, and to have the joy, have the appreciation, have the comfort that comes from being aware of how we are not separated from anyone or anything. We are a part of this flow of creative energy. And that's just the beginning, but boy, what a great beginning that is when we step out of the pattern in our culture of wanting to be right. And this, I think I mentioned this, it was also one of the main points that David White was making in his talk last week, that we're raised in a culture and we're trained in these schools to raise our hand and to have a single, simple, pat answer when a question is asked, rather than embracing the space of not knowing and just exploring from the emptiness or from the divine ignorance space, that opening questioning space. So, where we left off, and we're reading through lesson 16, and I've talked about how this is a chapter that I view it as the entire chapter is like a koan. It's something to give my mind something to chew on, the conscious logical mind, so it stays busy and distracted. So another part of my mind, the intuitive, that part that can be connected to the higher S, capital S self, the Christ mind, it can teach me, it can usher me into an experience. Area code 610, is this Susan?
Hi. Great questions, hello. All of them being, I bet a lot of us are thinking about just the things you've been talking about. When I saw those pictures and saw them juxtaposed to the Way of Mastery stuff that you've been reading, it's almost as if the Way of Mastery is saying, okay, have a look at those pictures. Now, this is how it works. This, try to understand. Of course, we can't, but it's as if the universe got huge on both ends. The visual, the size got even bigger in my mind than I ever realized it was, and I already knew it was way beyond. But to have the Way of Mastery trying to have us practice what I think it's what the Hindus called Jnana Yoga, which is the yoga of knowing, the yoga of studying. They claim that you can reach enlightenment through bhakti yoga, which is yoga of worship and devotion and love, which is the first part of the Way of Mastery. There are several kinds, but the opposite kind of the way of the heart is the way of thinking, scholarship, investigation, trying to figure it out, I guess. And that you can get there. The more you read, the less I think I can get there, and the more grateful I am for the first part of the Way of Mastery, which gives us a way out and a way in without requiring that we get everything in this, that they're presenting in the second part. But it also seems very strange to me and wonderful in a way that things have gotten very intense here at the house. We've got Jacob back, and he isn't in very good shape, and it's very stressful. I've been doing worksheets, but I also have been inviting and feeling invited to see these things as just a speck of dust, to detach, to allow. I'm not very good at it. And also what's happening in our culture and in the media, I don't know whether in the past we have wanted or felt we must be right so intensely as we do now in our present political and everything else situation. You know, for everything from do you get vaxxed, do you not get vaxxed, and who is right, or who do you vote for, who is right, climate change, who is right. Everything has gone to extremes, and it seems as if the way of mastery is trying to gather up our brain cells and help us understand some things that the more you read, the more I think I can only take about 10 minutes of this, and then my brain says, okay, I've gone on tilt. I'll pick one of those arcade machines. Tilt. It just
That's part of what a koan is intended to do, is to let that conscious, logical part of your mind go on tilt and let something else come in. So the idea is not that you're going to reach enlightenment with your conscious, logical mind. But, you know, another way to talk about it is that enlightenment is a deeper realization that my conscious, logical mind doesn't really know anything and can't grab or comprehend the most important things about life and existence.
I wonder if...
So rather than knowing how I live, how I move through the world, is in questioning. Is in this perpetual state of being taught by life in the moment what's true, what's real, what's needed, how to bless the world. That is not a knowing the way our conscious logical mind thinks about knowing.
Right. And yet it's such a relief to have the hope that comes with, although we don't know, we have these things that we can do. It's sort of like Martin Buber. He has I-thou relationship. You don't have to know anything about what you're dialoguing with, or I-it, which is the effort to understand and therefore objectify something that really you can't understand. I know my mind's going all over the place, but it's your fault, Dr. Tim, because you're bringing all this stuff together in here, and brain cells are struggling anyway. So you ask for responses. That's one kind of blunderbuss answer, and I bet other people don't feel very differently about it. Anyway.
Well, and that's it. This is that transition phase when we go from the thoroughly conditioned Western mind, which has been trained to look for the pat answers and to decide who's right and who's wrong and to categorize things and to either have it in a variety of categories or have it be a dichotomy. There's just yes or no. There's black or white. There's right or wrong. And if we go from that space toward what this state that a lot of traditions would call enlightenment, that comfort in that grinding things out in the conscious logical mind, which is really the comfort of the hamster wheel, we have to let that go. We have to get uncomfortable because we have to stop doing what we've always done. We have to find a new way to use our mind energy and our time, and it's going to feel very novel, new, different.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will generate fear in response to that novelty and newness and difference.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will generate
yes.
exhilaration in response to it. Some people
mm-hmm.
will generate absolute confusion. It's okay, but it needs to happen. I can't, as it said in the last lesson, I can't have transformation. This left section of the Way of Mastery is called the Way of Transformation. I can't have transformation if I keep doing what I've always done.
Right.
I have this mechanism within my mind that creates my experience of life, just like my eyes create the existence of a rainbow. I choose an interpretation for everything that goes on in my life, and therefore I create my experience of it. I can't transform that and still do the same thing I've always done at the same time.
Right.
So part of the work is to get comfortable with the change. And that's easier for some than others.
Mm.
Some people, it's just absolutely torturous. And for some people, it's relatively easy. And for some people, they actually get excited and enjoy it. And they look for ways to change things up. If they stay within the framework of the Western mind, they're looking for ways to change things up with the goal of being able to say, I get it. I know. And this
right.
invitation is to change it up and go into free fall.
That's a great word. That's what it feels like.
Then you've accepted the invitation. If you're getting it and you're feeling certain, you haven't accepted the invitation. Guy Finley has these wonderful stories he used to tell about, you know, the fact that no true spiritual step is ever taken with certainty. Any true spiritual step, any true learning, any true exploration, any true expansion is done not knowing where it's going to lead or how it could work out. And time and time again, he says things like, and the hero of this story stepped forward thinking, I've got to be the dumbest person that ever lived for what I'm about to do. Whether it's walking into a gaping maw of fiery teeth or stripping off all of one's armor and putting down the shield and sword before walking, you know, into a path that's, you know, everybody else who's walked into that path has been chewed up by a monster. Whether it's stepping out into what seems to be an open abyss to hope that the stepping stone will appear, all of those are examples of that free fall type, you know, stepping into the free fall that come from Guy Finley stories, and it's essentially what's being asked of us here. It's essentially what the direct observation is that we can be led to from this thing I read earlier about you only see less than 1% of the visual spectrum, of the light spectrum. You only hear less than 1% of the acoustic spectrum. Right? You have no idea as you're reading this. You can't feel anything about the truth that you're traveling through the galaxy at 220 kilometers per second.
Mm.
You can't sense any of that. A rainbow, the colors in the rainbow look as real to you as the hand at the end of your arm. You have no idea that doesn't exist outside of the picture your brain is creating. It doesn't exist for lots of different animal species. And lots of different animal species see and hear and feel things that you walk right through and can't see or hear or feel. And it's got to be okay. Guy Finley has another line that I've enjoyed over the years, and he says, "We all have wings that only open in midair." So you needn't worry about the free fall sensation, because unless you're willing to step into that free fall, not knowing divine ignorance space, you can't discover the wings. You can't discover your connection to a higher level of wisdom or integration.
That's really amazing.
Unless you fall into the free fall, unless you learn to live in the questioning, you can't get access to a deeper level of knowing from which you understand all the things you worried about are irrelevant.
You know, Maya Angelou once said that one reason she could step out into the world and do so many amazing things that she did was she taught herself at a very young age that she was going to die. Her body was going to die. She made it very plain to herself. She just kept teaching herself and really got it. And she said after she really got it, she felt free to go out and do things that she might have been too afraid to do before. It's almost as if you're saying similar things with this, the free fall. She taught herself how to fall.
Exactly. How to live without the idea of certainty. How to live in the question, as Rilke would call us to. And it is, you know, it's antithetical to everything we've been taught, because this Western culture has been so focused on the certainty and the safety and the comfort, which is okay for a young child, that they don't have to be worried about living and dying each moment. But when it gets extended the way we do in the Western culture to this intellectual process and elevating the intellect to such a high place, to the exclusion of the developing even an awareness or developing the skills of the intuition and the creative mind, that's where it's problematic. So welcome to free fall. Welcome to the complete unknowing. Welcome to learning to live in the question. And please understand that you're never going to know that whole thing that we were raised on was false. The whole idea that you could know, right? I mean, like to take a word like courage. Like, what value is courage if you don't have fear? Courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is the willingness to move forward despite the fear. Somebody who never has any fear doesn't need courage. I think we've run into this on the internet show. I think there have been times when you've called in and said, "Oh, Tim, Dr. Hayes, it was so courageous of you to share this work." And I would correct you and say, well, you know, the truth of it is what you're saying here is you would have had to tap into quite a bit of courage to share like that, because you have all of these, you know, predetermined notions that it would be bad or dangerous or risky in some way. And I haven't felt that. I have just felt the inevitability of the benefit. So if I had this inevitability of benefit and this impulse to share, it doesn't take courage for me to share.
Mm.
If I have a set of beliefs that says, wow, if I share this, this could go really badly, and then I share it anyway, that means I'm going to have to tap into courage to overcome that fear. So while a lot of people from the Western world would say this is silly to just go at life asking to be shown and observing how little you know and being increasingly working within yourself to get a little bit more comfortable each day with the complete lack of knowing, with the complete lack of control. That, for most people in the Western mind, that will take courage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's that stirring up for you?
You're pretty smart, Dr. Tim. Well, it's... I love that cackle. Well, there's been this, you know, time with my grandson here who is... I don't trust the universe to have him be okay without my somehow enabling or helping him. I'm in Al-Anon, and it's been mind-blowing because they're just filled with things you can say to yourself or to the other person when you're cornered, feel cornered by some little emotional trap. So my exercise has been to allow him to be in free fall, allow him to sleep all day, do nothing for 3 weeks, expect to be given an allowance when there's no participation in the chores of the household, or laying down the law and risk being shot down, being the object of tremendous venomous rage. Juggling being detached with being, with keeping an active present love, which isn't hard because he's my grandson and I just have an unconditional love for him. But I am filled with fear for him, for his life. And he's filled with fear for his life because he says, I don't know how I'm going to get through my life. I can't even hold down a job because I have so much anxiety. You know, I need to be taken care of. And then the flip side of that is an expectation or a sense of privilege and entitlement. You know, you have to pay my way or else I'll really stick
right,
it to you.
Right, but here's the idea with that. You don't have any control over whether or not he acknowledges his need to participate actively in his life. You don't have
right.
any control over that.
Absolutely.
The only thing you've got control over is how much you give in to his terrorist demands.
Right.
That's the only thing that you have control over. You don't have control over whether or not it, quote, works out, close quotes.
Right.
And you don't have any control over what working out would look like.
That's true, too, yeah.
So your job in a situation like this as a parent or grandparent is to come to terms with the fact that you don't have the power and you don't know how someone is going to take the thoughts, words, and actions that you share and use them for their benefit or their detriment. You don't have any control over that.
Right. That's true.
That's your work, getting more comfortable with that truth. That's your literal work in a situation like this is to, I mean, like listen, part of what you're trying to get your grandson to understand is that this is just the way it is. And while you're trying to get him to understand this is just the way life is, you have to work or contribute in the house if you're going to get, you know, be a success in life. Or while you're trying to get him to understand you just have to deal with life the way it is, you're struggling to deal with the fact that you don't have control over him and his choices. And this is just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oddly enough,
one of the best things you can do for him is step back and demonstrate accepting that you will focus on those things you have control over and you will stop focusing so much on all those things you don't have control over. Which, in this particular arena, are the things that he is choosing to do. Whether it's raging at you because you withheld some money or allowance or whatever, or whether it's refusing to do chores to contribute to the household, whatever it is he's doing, as you focus on it, you're teaching him to focus on things he has no control over and get all anxious and worked up over it. But if you focus on the things you have control over, and one of those is, being loving towards him and sending him loving energy, and I don't mean being loving towards him the way he wants you to be by
right.
paying for things
exactly.
that he hasn't earned. I mean being loving
yeah.
towards him in how you respond calmly, even if he's raging, and being loving towards him.
Yeah.
You can
yeah.
do that? Good.
I've been doing that. I mean, the snark factor comes out every day, and I don't say anything. I just go about my business. I don't have anything to say. So, but I don't yell at him, or I just go about my business, and pretty soon he comes around as if nothing happened and asks me to help him with setting up a song on the computer or... And then I do that, and I wonder, is it okay that I'm going right ahead with helping him with a thing that's perfectly reasonable to ask for and not mentioning the snark?
Well, it's okay, but it has a set of consequences. It creates a dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It's going to be okay however it works out, but...
Mm-hmm.
And it does contribute to his believing he can do that with people and not have consequences.
Yeah.
So
well,
just,
I'm telling you.
What are you telling me?
It's good to hear the radio show. Just good to have my mind stretched beyond this little situation here.
Well, and remember, it's the idea that what we're being led towards is the opposite of certainty at the intellectual level.
Well, certainly that's happened, and I see that that's very true. Yeah. We think about trust, though, and I don't have enough of that. I would like to just trust that all will be well. And that is a goal, I guess. I guess that's a goal I have to give up.
Yeah, it is. I never realized it.
Yep.
Thank you, Dr. Kim.
Yep. You could absolutely look at it that way, and it's encouraged because it is, you know, I mean, like, essentially, when you said that, my mind said, oh, so you want to go through this without anxiety.
Right. Shut up, will you?
And I don't know how to help you do that, right? I don't. This is, just come back to what we were just saying about these Guy Finley stories. He says, no true spiritual step is ever taken with certainty. You're
mm-hmm.
going to feel terrified. You're going to think, this must be the dumbest thing that anybody's ever done. I have no idea where this is going or if this will work out because my intellect is not my guide in this. I can't go into the new and welcome it like an old friend because it's going to be different than anything I've ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of the new.
Yeah. You know, one factor that I'm curious about is the fatigue factor. Last night after a series of snarks, I just came up here with my dinner and said, Tim Bingham, you have to take over. I need to be quiet. I am on strike, I'm going on strike. And I came up, and evidently Jacob came up and ate supper, and Tim and he did what they did, and Tim, I'm sure, was the one to clean the dishes, and I went down with my dirty dish after and, you know, got through it all, but I just get really tired, and I'm sure that's because I have goals and I'm pushing hard and stuff. I would just like to get easier about the whole thing and retain some kind of vitality. Some of it I feel totally drained by it. And it's only been 2 days that he's been here, and he's going to be here a month. So I guess it's all part of having goals that when they're not met, I'm getting tired. Yeah. Anyway, this has gotten very personal.
Having goals, right, and you'll notice that when you have a goal and you end up getting very tired, most of the time that will be because you have a goal for someone or something that you've got no control over.
Right.
Right. It's not that goals are bad. It's that when we set goals that we don't have any control over and or we set goals for which we are holding, you know, this connected resonant energy for trauma from our past, then we're going to experience that trauma or emotional energy from our past, and that's what's going to happen over and over and over again because it's connected that way in our system. The law of resonance is always active. And if we've got these things in our background and they're connected that way, they're, you know, neurons that fire together, wire together kind of thing. If we've got that in our history and we load up a goal that's connected to that, we're going to feel it. We're going to have that energy resonated. We're going to have those emotions resonated. Mm-hmm. It's just the way our lives go. It's the way the universe works.
Right.
So it's the idea that we don't really want, which is to get comfortable with the not knowing. And that's essential because we can't know. And the intellect, right, this way of mastery says right there in the first lesson, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. And this is all about the way of the heart. So we need to get, you know, here's a paradoxical statement. We need to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable. We need to get more comfortable with not knowing. We need to get more comfortable with the idea of being in free fall because we can't know in advance. that's not the way this world works. And we didn't get to create this world. We just create our experience of it.
Mm.
So I appreciate the fact that you are resonating with the thought of being in free fall and rising to the challenge of being more willing to be uncomfortable. I'll say it that way. Rather than being more comfortable with being uncomfortable, I'll say being more willing to be uncomfortable.
Hmm.
To move forward, even though I don't know where this is going. To move forward even with zero certainty.
Right.
What the Way of Mastery would call divine ignorance. And when you have a goal, whether it's for your grandson or for yourself, and you're feeling tight and tense, you know, you've learned from this work what's the best. The best option then is cancel the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Put yourself back in the questioning state and ask to be shown.
Yeah, I didn't realize I had the goal of trusting the universe to take care of him if and when I can't. And even that, it's a good thing to let that one go. That's been a big one.
I'm sure it will resonate and bring up for you and help you tap into other awarenesses of situations like that in your past where you've had that goal and it got paired with really upsetting emotions, really intense emotions, because it
mm-hmm.
didn't, you know, pan out the way you would have hoped. And that's what happens when I load in a goal that I don't have any control over and or it's connected in my mind, in my energy system because of the law of resonance with uncomfortable emotions or traumatic energies, they get resonated into activity and I feel them.
Yeah.
And so I'm canceling the goal, not because the goal is a bad goal, but because it's connected in my energy system to this unpleasant energy that I've already been through before. So, thank you again for the call and questions and comments. I will mute you so you can listen into the next hour. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. Thanks for putting your hand up.
Thank you.
Blessings.
Me too.
I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. And if you're talking, you're muted.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And you have a good rest of the day.
All right. You too. Blessings.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, July the 18th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I see Susan's hand's already gone up, so I'll talk to you while I'm waiting on Michael to get on.
So, Jeannie, you've lost an octave in your voice. What did?
Yeah, I actually, this started with me Friday night and really hit me hard Saturday. Last night I thought I was going to die, seriously. I went to the doctor this morning and I'm COVID positive.
Oh, and so am I.
Oh, no.
Four tests were totally, completely in error, so crazy time.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. It goes that way.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, you guys.
So here we are.
So breathe with us and hold space. Join in the joy.
Breathing already. Yeah. So what are your symptoms and what are your energy levels and how are you sleeping and are you eating? And, oh.
No, we're eating pretty well. We're doing a lot of lemon water and cayenne during the day. The first symptom was a sore throat. And then went up into kind of like an earache. I swear I would have thought that mine was just bronchitis. It felt like it was in my bronchial tubes this morning. And they said, well, we have to, you know, we'll meet you in the parking lot and we'll do a COVID test before we let you come in the office. And they actually did a different one. They swab your throat instead of up your nose. They said it's more chances of it being more accurate. So anyway, then they called me back in about 15 minutes and did a office visit over the telephone, over the, you know, I could see them and they could see me, but they weren't going to let me in. And so they've called in some prescriptions for Michael and I both, and I'll go pick them up after the radio show.
God, you guys are trippers.
And fortunately, I'm the only real thing I've got going on is this. My throat still sounds like I've come out of puberty. My voice is deepened.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm, you know, I've got a very, very slight bit of congestion left to my upper chest. But otherwise, I'm 100% clear of it. So it was a few days that were a little nasty, but not terrible. And so Jeannie's turn,
nasty.
I guess.
Jeannie said she thought she would die. Oh, my God. What was that all about?
No, I mean my symptoms. I'm talking about my symptoms.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so.
I got you confused.
Yeah. So I'm receiving it as another inoculation. And, you know, when Jeannie seemed to be coming up the other side of it and then took a dive, I started to do some research on the COVID test, and it's like, it looks like these things are about 50% of the time are false negatives. It's crazy.
Oh, they are. For the
it's like,
newest,
why did they even put them out there? It's insane. I guess there's money in them.
Well,
but
they were good. It's the new variant that doesn't tell you. I think they were good for the older variants.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got Jacob here. He got exposed and, you know, he's negative, but we're watching. Same thing. He was
we'll
in the program.
Space.
And yeah, he hugged the guy who was positive and came home and said, oh, I just found out that the pianist that I hugged goodbye. Ooh, so we're watching too. Yeah. Can happen pretty fast.
So I'm along with reading about the testing, I did some reading on, you know, having gone through COVID, and actually there's some pretty good evidence that the immunity from having had COVID is significantly stronger and will last significantly longer than any vaccine. In fact, you know, they're saying that they're projecting that the ultimate immunity is can be years from having had it, so I'm going to just thank it and bless it and let it be on its way and get to the next level. I noticed, you know, you've heard me share before that one of the challenges in my life in the past has been feet, and you know, this morning actually when I got up, I noticed a shift in my feet that was positive, that was, there's something that's loosened up in my feet that it wasn't that it was any problem before, but it seems like a new flexibility and a positive change in my feet. So I'm taking that as one of the upgrades that this round of COVID's given my body, and we'll see how it unfolds from there. You know, Jeannie got
sounds
a, the
good.
Last time we had it, Jeannie got a a really powerful shift in her neck, actually. Now, I haven't noticed anything else shifting in a positive direction. I did the first time I had it. But just this morning when I stood up, it was like, uh-oh, something's changed in my feet, and they're more flexible and more sensitive. So I'm taking that as my COVID gift and cashing it in and moving forward.
Ooh. And Jeannie, how about you?
So we hold that you and that young man are safe.
Thanks.
Excuse me, Jeannie, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like I said, I thought it was just maybe a sore throat and bronchitis over the weekend. And then last night, if I could have took my temperature, it probably would have been 104 or 105. I mean, my eyeballs hurt. My face was so hot, I couldn't touch my skin. I couldn't get out of bed. And by the time that I got cooled down enough that I could get up, I did take my temperature, and it was 101.3.
Wow.
And that was after I had cooled down. So after that, I thought, oh, God, I'm going to go to the doctor and see what this is. So anyway.
And it's probably a good thing you did, because we had 42 COVID test eats that said negative. So it's a good thing you did.
Right. And Ryan and Gabby have decided, we told them we left it up to them because Aria was with us all last week, and apparently Michael
of
had
course.
It last week. And But they said they would prefer to wait, so we don't get the baby this week.
Well, probably good, considering your energy is being spent getting well here.
Yeah, it'll give us time to get over it.
Well, you always are amazing, making your lemonade out of the lemons. I just think it's great.
I'm actually chewing on the lemon pulp as we speak.
Yeah, we're both drinking lemon water with cayenne pepper. So,
yep.
Yeah, I did a double dose last night, so I just finished my first bottle today with probably a little better than a half teaspoon of cayenne, so it's been a hot morning.
Woo! That is, wow, knock your tonsils out totally. You better be careful. Have you got enough groceries and everything?
We've got a garden. We can't even start to eat the food we're growing.
Wow.
Gene did another batch of zucchini crab cakes last night, and
we've got
lots and lots of food. Yeah,
wonderful.
We can't keep up with
That's
our garden
great.
At this point.
Wow!
And the tomatoes haven't even come on yet. We've got probably 24 fist-sized tomatoes, but they haven't turned red yet. Our cherry tomatoes are producing by the pound, just popping. These things are like little bits of candy. And so we're set with food.
Oh, good.
So how is the report for Jacob on his return home to Orb's house?
Very up and down. I've been doing wake-up sheets and giving up goals and doing my Al-Anon, which is helpful, because there are just very practical things that need responses right on the spot.
Right.
The most recent one is, now he's living here rent-free, room and board, and we customarily have been giving him an allowance, and I am anticipating a blow-up because I'm going to say, allowance is contingent on your contributing to the efforts of the household, whether it means mowing or dishes or helping with the refugees tomorrow. I could use a hand. Maybe singing an aria at church, which we could use. I've always already been the recipient of some snark. It's like watching his father smoldering right under.
Yeah.
And I have not been reacting at all. I don't even speak. I just go silent and disappear and go about my business. Whereupon, 20 minutes later or something, he'll come around perfectly fine and wants to talk about something, and I haven't found a way to bring up the snark. I have just gone along with the present emotion. If it's respectful, then I'm fine, and I've been holding the space and breathing and giving up all goals. The biggest goal,
right,
I just discovered was operant was on Dr. Tim's show a minute ago, which was I have been telling myself to trust the universe that he'll be okay, and I have to give up that goal.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
There's just no initiative. There's a sense of profound entitlement to being given money and protection and to have us do things for him, and he's perfectly capable. And I need a lot of courage, too, because I don't like being the object of his rage.
Yeah,
but I'm learning,
sure.
I've learned not to take it personally, but it's very unpleasant.
Right.
So,
well,
and then there have
one
been
of the other
times. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of the other contingencies you might put in place is that he recognizes that he needs to do some healing, and he starts doing it. And, you know, the simple way to introduce it might be as simple as, do you notice how, you know, like maybe in the middle of one of the really up and positive conversations, do you notice how we've got this great rapport and things are good and you're talking sweetly and gently to me, but the minute that I or somebody else violates a goal that you hold for them, or the minute you violate a goal that you hold for yourself, like you wanted to do this wonderful, you know, song, and then you failed at that goal. And so notice what you pointed at yourself. Notice what you point at people when they frustrate a goal that you have for them. Now, there's a clue to your healing. And maybe that might arouse some curiosity for him. What do you mean that's a clue to my healing? And that would perhaps open the space to explain that goals drive perception, and when a goal is frustrated, that goal is linked to either sweetness and decency, or it's linked to hostility and fear, and it's the opportunity to heal the hostility and fear. And so perhaps that might be another contingency to put into the equation on money. You know,
yeah,
that you're willing to give him the basic sustenance, but especially if he's spending money on drugs or alcohol, it's like, you know.
Which he is. He goes off in his car and comes home and goes right to the basement where he's got a set up down there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm telling you, Michael, the biggest challenge is just fatigue for me. I mean, just to have enough vitality to
it's
live.
It's a lot to deal with.
It is. So, gosh, I think of you and Jeannie with your COVID thing, and you need vitality too, and sometimes it's just hard to find enough of it.
Well, one of the things that always keys us into it, and one of the things that inhibits it, is holding the breath and breathing to open that flow of energy up. And you notice when,
mm-hmm,
when things are down, the breath isn't moving.
I do know
that.
That's a big
key.
And
that might be another thing. You know, you've got
the
hands-on energy field work. Maybe just invite him to lay down and breathe and just do the energy field work and let him breathe. You know, who knows what he might touch into if he were to actually do a full still point session. And you know how to facilitate that between you and Tim. It's like you can't get much easier for him if he's not wanting to put out effort. Well, here, just lay and breathe. Like you're going to do, you are going to do something about your healing because you need to heal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the resistance you're going to meet is, to quote an ancient teaching, is legion. So we extend love in your direction.
Thanks.
Is there anything anything else we can specifically help address to see if we can move this forward? Is how's Tim doing with him being there and all that's going on?
He's helping Jake with practical things, filling out forms, making sure he gets his scholarship back. It was suspended because he had to drop out.
Right.
Tim is very willing to give him whatever money he asks for, and I've been telling him this is not helping him now. Please join me in the Al-Anon mindset. But Tim has a lot of anxiety about things and kind of caves, and so we're not exactly on the same page, and otherwise Tim is much more detached than I am.
Yeah, the enabling is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, it sounds like you are set to learn a young lady
a lot.
At this tender age you're at, this whole new round of life lessons.
Yep. This is true, and thank God, and I do, Michael, I know I'm not showing up at your still point stuff, but I do my breathing as best I can.
Awesome.
Morning, noon, and night. Walking, lying down, putting my hands in places, making sure the air is going from top to toe and so forth.
Yes. Fabulous.
So thank you for that. And you know, I noticed how much I stopped breathing. I get up in the morning, I'm making my lemon water, which I have a concoction like yours probably, and I realize I'm not breathing. And I make this resolve, okay, breathe while you're doing this. But how many times does that happen during the day? I'm sure it happens all the time, and I'm still unconscious about it.
Most people spend their whole lives subventilating. That's, and when you realize that's your direct connection with God, you know, and start to acknowledge that each time the breath is being stopped, there's something that I don't want to feel, I don't want to look at, and I don't want to deal with. Then I step into the willingness to let it happen and let the breath move fully, then it moves. And, you know, in over 40 years of working with thousands of people with breath work, there's nothing the breath won't resolve if we'll let it move fully. It just will handle whatever, everything. And remember, it is Rukka in action. Will teach you what you need to know.
Good to be reminded of that.
You know,
I don't always remember.
What is Rukka Dukkha? Yeah, remember the definition of Rukka Dukkha. She, the feminine elemental force, who undoes the effects of your errors, and probably some of the stuff that's going on with this young man being genetically connected with you is in part the effects of your errors in your life being, you know, the upline genetics. And so as you turn it over, she will undo those effects in him as well as you and teach you the truth and guide you. I mean, literally, I mean, I've had guidance where I was given a word on a page in a dictionary and opened the dictionary and God, that word was on that page number. And there was the answer to my question.
Wow.
She will give it to you. Listen to her. She will give it to you. And the way
to listen, Michael, is to breathe. Okay. Thank
you. It's
kind
of like
that's
listening. Yeah. Listening is a function of forgiveness. So know that we're here holding the space with you and breathing fully with you. And holding you both in safety if he's made contact with anything to do with COVID.
Oh, yeah, thanks. So far, so good. But, you know, I know it takes a while. Look at what happened to you. You were sure you were okay. You had this frog resident in your throat, and you were sailing along. It does take a while before you know. So you're right.
Well, you know, I mean, we didn't know that Joel had COVID. I left there on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it was when I got back from Boston on Monday that I found out, or when I was on my way back, that I found out that they tested Joel. He had COVID and he passed. And that's when I started with this frog in my throat, so it was 4 days.
And
now,
right.
So.
My son's been
now
telling
we're past
me,
week.
Don't even use. My son was telling me, don't even use the test on him for the first 2 or 3 days. They won't yield anything. Wait.
Yeah.
And then put the test in. We have one test waiting to be tested. That's it.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and Jeannie did 2 tests, and it was the antigen.
Right.
I assume they gave her, when they did the throat, they did the antigen test rather than the quick test, and that's what showed it. So,
right.
You know, maybe day 3, get them in to see your son and just get that check, but I'll hold the space.
Thanks, Michael.
And again, you know, one of the other reminders would be that COVID and trauma all involves microcirculation. So getting him to put his hand in the Avacyn and spend some time, you know, 30 minutes, 2 or 3 times a day might
getting
be
getting it back from my friend. That my friend has confiscated it at my home, but she loves it. My friend Ginny, who's 84, she says it has restored my hand. She uses it 2 or 3 times a night, which means she's probably an insomniac. But in any case, she sticks her hand in it. So we
well,
have it here.
You know, we've got a used one available if she's interested in buying one that you know, is lower than the regular retail price. So if she's interested in that, ask her to call me.
What are you asking for it?
$1,900.
Yeah, she's just not, you know, if I said 400, she'd probably say no. That's why she borrowed mine. She's in a situation where she just isn't.
Okay.
What's the word? Yeah, thank you. That's very nice. Cause we.
I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah, the price of them has come down.
Yeah. She's been great. She's in our Zoom group, and she is one cookie. I mean, she hasn't done a worksheet yet. She's reluctant for some reason, but she says she gets a tremendous amount out of things and is a wonderful presence. She's quiet. So, great lady.
Sweet. Well, we'll hold space for sure.
Yeah. I keep telling her, okay, Ginny, next week you're going to do it.
Your turn.
Okay. Okay.
Take her through. Take her through the
remember
simple.
Remember what we said? She says, "What?"
Take her through the simple children's worksheet. It's so just basic.
Oh, believe me, I've already taken everybody through that. Yeah, we were trying all.
Good.
We're trying them on for size, and we're getting opinions. Like I like this one, but I'd like to add in, you know, this factor that was in the other one. So forth. Yeah.
You know, in the hear my voice Zoom group, 2 sessions back, we did, it ended up being about a 2.5-hour worksheet.
Yeah,
it
I listened
really,
to that. It was.
Well, I was
going
to say, it might be something to play for the group.
Wow, that's a thought.
That video might be something, you know, to you know, if you start on your computer and then just do share screen. And, you know, and it might even be something, I hadn't thought of this before, but it might even be something to do a start and stop with. And, you know, if people have questions, so we'll go through and see what the questions are. And then, of course, if any support's needed with those questions, you're certainly most, we'd be most delighted if you ask them on the show. But that might be, I hadn't really thought about using that video that way, but that would be powerful.
Great idea.
This was a woman who had was just, you know, starting cold turkey. So,
right.
So it was a good session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, any other thoughts for you? Anything we can support you with?
No. In fact, I have to go. I have another appointment that's interrupting the rest of your show. So I've got to go. But thank you so much. I wasn't going to come on, but when I heard Jeannie's voice, I thought, she's lost an octave. She's now a tenor. What happened? Oh,
well, now I'm becoming more of a bass, so we'll see what happens.
you'll get them
back. All right, we'll be holding space for whatever your work is today, and cherish you and appreciate
you
a lot and all that you're doing.
And you guys, too, so much. Yeah. All right, I've got to go now. So,
okay, take care.
Love.
Blessings. Got it.
Yeah.
Receiving it. All right, extending it in your direction.
So,
all right, well, Miss Jeannie?
563-999-3581 and press 1.
And if we don't have any thoughts or questions, then let's look at this idea of who we are as human beings and remember to remember who we are as, you know, recognizing that reality is the output of the mind and that we become the observer, if we choose to be, of the output of our minds rather than being the output of our minds. You know, we've used the words actuality and reality and distinguished between them. Oftentimes people use those words interchangeably. But while actuality is, you know, if you've looked at, and by the way, thank you, Susan, for tapping us into, I hadn't heard about this new telescope, but wow, what amazing shots they were from space. So when you realize that that's the actuality, and then we have this little pinhead of a thing that we call a mind that generates realities for us, and that our realities are experienced by who we are and remembering who we are. You know, if you go back and hold the newborn child, you recognize that the newborn child is not a body, but is the presence of active love. And that when our mind outputs a picture of who we think we are, that picture is totally and completely false. You know, when Yeshua said, in order for you to live, you've got to die, that self, the picture in the mind of oneself as a body with all the attributes that have been brainwashed into us by power persons, by the world, by our genes, when we recognize that that's not who we are, then we develop this ability to step back from our reality structures, to become realized as human beings, to become incarnated as human beings. So to become the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the action. And to really distinguish between the actuality of who we are, the actuality of the world, and then that our minds got so many transient realities that are in most cases nothing but reflections of the past, nothing but replays of the past, and we tend to invest in them so deeply, never realizing that they're nothing but a wisp of energy from long ago held brain cells. So at every moment of your life, there's a truth unique to you. And that truth is who you are. Recognizing, as we've said so often, that content of the mind is always reflected in reality. So the first thing reality does tells you about the content of your mind. Are you disturbed by the reality in your mind? Then know that it's your content. Can you observe the reality in your mind and you're not lost in it? Then recognize that it is just content, and that when we wake up, that there's room to recognize that each person's reality is valid for them. And if you give space for people to have their own reality, of course, that doesn't mean you lay down and let somebody puke their reality all over you, but to realize that each person's reality is unique to them, the output of their minds, and to create a space to, with compassion, be in the practice of handling the pain parts of one's own reality and to become unlocked from the power person dynamic. And many people are, you know, if one was subject to a power person who, no matter what happened, always made them wrong, always made them bad, always made them the object of a problem, then the reality structure of the mind that was subject to that power person dynamic from one's power person will always be one of making somebody else wrong, making somebody else the problem. So when I recognize the truth is that when we're empowered to reach into the deeper parts of our own reality structure, then, you know, it's possible to bring correction. Those shifts can happen. And words really do key us in to the deeper parts of our own minds. So when you pay careful attention to your words, they'll give you clues to the underlying dynamics, the underlying content of your mind, and to play the game. Remember the definition we have of denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is a cause of something that's moving inside of me, then I'm in that belief. That means that to hide the truth from myself of what's going on, and that's when stress goes up. That's when I tend to distort the world around me and project the content of my own mind into my brain's image of others. And the objective, of course, is, you know, I mean, it's virtually impossible to stop doing that. It is a part of living in a mind. But what we can do is we can bring active present love to the mind that's doing that and transform it from simply replaying the past. If we're willing to honor the presence of love over and above the hostility and fear garnered from power person dynamics, then we can take those same situations and step into processing mode. But you can't be in processing mode. You know, it's kind of like Einstein said, you can't simultaneously prepare for war and prepare for peace, or you can't do both. You can't simultaneously take responsibility and blame somebody else. So when you're in the blame game, you make me so, whatever it is, then you can't be in processing mode. And remember, our definition of the word processing in this work is the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. And so recognizing that until the power person dynamic is processed through, we become what we hate, and we attract what we fear. You know, what we fear, you know, listen to that statement that Job, after all that trauma that Job went through, he got his insight. It's like, oh my God, this is it. That which I feared most has come upon me. And guess what? If it doesn't come upon you in form, it will come upon you from your own internal reality structure, because it's there. So one who's unwilling to be responsible for their own power person dynamics and lives in the game of blame could be sitting with Yeshua the Christ, and guess who they'd blame? Yeshua would be to blame. Because we will become the expression of what is unresolved in us in regard to our power person. And then through resonance, we'll attract that energy. We'll either pull it out of someone else, or we'll pull it out of ourselves and do it to ourselves if nobody else is available. You notice the recluse? What do? They get a little batty. They get a little wacky. Because when there's nobody else around to put it on, they put it on themselves. And that means that each one has to keep an inventory of what it is their work is. when the mind goes into that hostility and fear, when projection is the order of the day, then the forgiveness process is the resolution.
We have a hand.
Oh, awesome. Let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Sarah, 317. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. How are you guys?
Welcome, young lady.
Thank you.
Rocking along. How about you?
Yeah, same. Rocking along, working through my stuff. So needing to work through my power person issues. Really became more apparent. I was just looking through all the power person worksheets that both Julie and Roma had forwarded to me a couple months ago, and I pulled out the papers, and it's a little overwhelming in some ways, but definitely very powerful. So it was good to hear what you were saying. Having it been done to me, and then scary thinking of all I've passed on as a result as well.
I hear you.
So
I hear you. It's definitely interesting learning opportunities, aren't they?
Yes. And I do have a question, because this is not necessarily specific to the power person thing, but I keep meaning to ask it, and I never get it asked. So specifically when you say holding the space, can you give me – I think I kind of know what it means, but I'd love to hear a full definition.
Sure. Yeah, holding the space is recognizing who we are as love. And usually it's easier to hold the space for someone else than for oneself, because, of course, everybody believes what they believe that's led them to be in the state where they've created what they've created in their lives. And so the ability to step back, part of it is stepping back from your own mind, the ability to step back and disbelieve what you believe, if one believes everybody else is the problem in their lives, then, it's hard not to believe that. And so when that energy is moving in oneself, being able to process oneself, and again, processing is the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. So if I believe that everybody else is the problem in my life, then it's going to be difficult for me to stand as the presence of love in the space of that belief surfacing in me, because it's going to surface as a picture in my mind that I believe, and it's obviously your problem. It's somebody else's fault. So usually the learning process starts with holding a space for someone else where you're not so attached to their beliefs, and that is to stand as conscious, active, present love in the middle of the muddle. Again, easier usually to do that for someone else than for oneself. So if there's someone around you that's doing their work and is having a challenge, it can be sweet to just, if you remember the love exchange tool, get quiet, find the deepest, clearest love within myself that I can, focus into that, and extend that love in your direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as I do that, I'm beginning to hold space. And as I can refrain from joining with this other person's trauma and be that space, that opens the energy window for me to learn to start to do that with myself. So can I be present with myself as love when trauma is moving in me or another person? If I can, then that would be our definition of holding the space.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation.
And the beauty of that is on an energetic level, on the level where love is the truth about us, there's nothing we know of in the universe that can stop that high energy wave. You know, if we have a, if we're in a room and we turn on a light, well, the light's throughout the whole room. But if I go out and close the door, I don't see the light. The light doesn't penetrate the wall. But if I had an X-ray machine, it would sure penetrate the wall. I'd have to line the wall with an eighth of an inch of lead in order for the X-ray not to penetrate the wall. If I set loose a gamma ray, it would pass right through the eighth of an inch of lead. I think, you know, it might take, I'm not sure if I remember, it might be something like 18 inches of lead to stop the gamma ray. There's nothing we know of that can stop the energetic emanence from the active presence of love. And so that can be done with anyone at any time, anywhere in the world. We can hold that space and be that space for them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what we give, we receive.
Mm-hmm. I think that's potentially what you were mentioning there was like why I ended up on during the breath workshop on Saturday having such a
right
a response. I know that
share
I,
with us
I
what that means.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah, just as I really had a lot of like somato-emotional releases, a lot of sensations actually, or lack of sensations, like paralysis in my legs. I needed to get up, but I was incredibly dizzy and was just having a lot of somatic responses. Was it very powerful? It was, I wouldn't say it wasn't scary because I kind of knew what was occurring based on my history
right.
with the crazy people techniques and all. But so it was, but I felt wonderful afterwards. And I guess
that was going to be my question is how was your physiology doing post those healing crisis where the energy starts to move? And isn't Dr. Feelgood, but on the other side, could you see the upgrade in your physiology?
Yes, I could.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's the idea, yes.
I did have like a bit of stress on Sunday morning, I did a little bit more breathing, and then I was able to
right.
pass through it much more readily.
Sweet.
And I felt so good. At the same time, I'm like, okay, I know I need to do all these. I have these worksheets I really need to do, want to do, but I was feeling so good. I'm like, I don't know. I want to go through, you know, like, you know, sort of a love-hate relationship, you know, because it's like, I know I need to do the work, but I'm feeling so good. I don't know that I want to do the work. But I did later in the evening. Get back to doing it
right.
and have today basically to be
well,
able to do some more.
You know what one of the highest paid professions in the world is?
Selling.
And you know what?
Seven.
Most people who go into sales fail. Take someone very unique to sell. And it relates to exactly what you're talking about there. Basically, the average person goes into sales, and, you know, let's say they've got a monthly quota. And it's the 20th of the month or 10 days left, and they've reached their quota. Most people on the 20th of the month, if they reach their quota, hey, I'm feeling good. I'm doing good. I don't need to sell. And they'll lay back the next 10 days and not
mm-hmm.
continue to work at their high point. And then, you know, along about the 5th of the next month, when they hit their low point, they're like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to work really hard to fulfill my quota. But they're at the bottom of the pit trying to fulfill their quota. And they don't make their quota because they're working from the pit. If they'd been smart, they'd have kept working on that 20th day when they were rocking. They'd have kept working the other 10 days of the month, and they'd had half of their next monthly quota already met because on their high point is when they can rock through things. And then the smart salesperson recognizes, oh, I'm on my down cycle. I'm in the pit. Now I'm going to take a vacation. Now I'm going to relax for the next 10 days. and wait till I get back on the high side of it before I go back and sell. So most people who fail at selling and why it's so highly paid, when they're in their high, they want to relax. Hey, I'm going to go have fun. And when they're in the low is when they grind and work, and it's the hardest place to make any progress. The person is going to really be well paid in selling on the 20th of the month when they've hit their quota, keeps rocking right on through. And then when they hit their low point, that's when they back off and say, okay, I'm going to just take care of myself. So the reverse, mm-hmm. what the automatic inclination is, you know, when you're at that high point is when you can dig into the deepest issues in your life and process through them. You know, if I'm mm-hmm. at level, you know, I just did a big piece of work and I popped up the other side and, man, I'm at a level 10. I can take those level 9 issues that I've been carrying around my whole life and I can bang, bang, I can knock them out like nothing.
Mm-hmm. Now I see where you're going with this. I wasn't sure initially.
A level 9 issue.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to say that I did get myself, you know, back into it yesterday.
Motivated.
And I've spent some today too. So I am back at it. I see what you mean. It would have been nice if I had gotten started a little earlier yesterday too. So
yeah. I'd be well, and sometimes it's nice to just play when you're feeling good too.
Yeah. That's where I was for a little while, but so thank you. There was
Sweet.
One other thing that came up when you were talking about, like, you know, like it's easy to blame others. Do you have any, like, it seems to me that I've been very good about blaming me and putting it all on me.
Oh, yeah.
Is that? Okay.
It's interesting. In the Aramaic language, you are your own neighbor. When Yeshua talks about, you know, in order for you to live, you've got to die, he's talking about in order for you, the true pure being, to live, to express into this world, that which is not you that you think of as self, the false self based in hostility or fear, has to go, has to die. And so that mm-hmm. self has to be processed out.
Okay.
And restored to, you know, make the space within your structure for the truth of who you are to fully incarnate and to fully express through your physiology.
Okay.
Did that get to the root of where you wanted to go with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, when others do blame me, my power person is what I'm thinking of.
Right.
I've been quick to take it on and agree with it. And
right.
Well, that's the power person
dynamic I was talking about. That, mm-hmm. you know, if the power person isn't there to do it, remember there are 3 things required to install a power person dynamic in a mind. One, the power person has more power over your life than you do. 2, they're not functioning as love. And 3, you perceive it as survival. When that happens, the child, and it's usually a child and a parent, although not always, the child's energy field opens wide. It's just like, you know, the gates have been unlocked and they become a sponge. And every energy in the environment, you know, if it was a raging power person, then that rage is absorbed. And if it was a blaming power person, then the thoughts of blame are absorbed. That energy is just like a sponge, just sucked right into the child's energy field. And then in the future, their behavior, that child's behavior, and it doesn't matter if the child grows to be 90 years of age, the behavior until that power person dynamic is addressed and processed out, healed, forgiven, is that when under stress, you know, there are basically 3 behaviors that we do, and virtually everybody's controlled by this power person dynamic. When there's no stress, People do what they did to get along with their power person. When stress starts to build, they'll do what they did to resist and survive with their power person. And when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do what their power person did to them that they hated most. So if what your power person did was blamed you, then you're going to, under stress, tend to step into blame. And, of course, if there's somebody handy, you know, you can take your favorite person in the world, doesn't matter, you know, three-year-old child, and you can blame them. Look what they did. I have pain. I don't want to feel. So what do? I blame the child. Or if nobody's handy, I can blame myself. If that's what the power person did, then that will be the tendency. And there's where it's kind of like a double opportunity of forgiveness there, because you're undoing self-recrimination as well as the power person dynamic of wanting you as a child to be responsible for the pain in their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty common. It's pretty much, you know, I mean, and you know, when you realize the depth, you know, think about the person who's just, or maybe you've had moments where you've just gone totally berserk. You think about those berserk moments. And, you know, a parent has an environment where there are so many things to be accomplished. You know, gee, I've got to work. I got to put in my hours. Gee, I've got to pay the bills. Oh, I have to buy the new furniture. Oh, I have to get the house painted. Oh, I have to do the lawn. Oh, I have to take care of the baby. Oh, I have to buy the groceries. I have to. And that, each of those things creates a stress. And so the tendency is the stress becomes so overwhelming that the adult's power person dynamic kicks in and they just pass it on to the child. You know, the same dynamic, it goes on generation after generation after generation. And ultimately, what this work is about is becoming strong enough in the use of the tools to reach into the very depth of that power person dynamic, which, you know, when a being, a tender being, a child of 6 months, a year, 2 years, the first time that the power person's angry eyes fall upon them is such a trauma for that child that most people can't even revisit that trauma. It was too much. You know, I know over the years I've had many people who've, when I talk about, you know, hitting a child is abuse. Oh, it's not abuse. You know, I mean, you know, they hit me and look at me. I turned out all right. It's, you know, no problem here. And it's like, never hurt me. Oh, really? If you could go back to the first moment that those angry eyes and that angry blaming voice landed upon you. I mean, the child did something, you know, something fell off the table. And, you know, child was too, the child didn't knock it off the table. Yes, the child touched it and it went onto the floor and was damaged or whatever, but the child didn't knock it on the floor. But the adult, having been blamed, turns to the child and look what you did. You broke that. And it's like, no, the child didn't break it. Yes, the child hand hit it, knocked it on the floor and it was broken. But the child didn't of volition go, oh, there's something there I'm going to break. They didn't break it. They broke it, but they didn't break it. The blaming adult, you broke that. And if that becomes a dynamic in the mind, then we're going to tend to play that out on ourselves and everybody else. And it's a deep, deep place to go. I mean, it's the deepest forgiveness work anybody will ever do. It's that power person dynamic. I mean, it's the core of everything. Literally, the whole world is being run by it. Literally. I don't care where you go. Business, doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, church, corporation, government, president's office. I don't care where you go. Power person dynamic is running the world. Kindergarten class. It's running the world. So it's a big one to undo, and that's where the, you know, the ongoing practice of using the tools becomes so important, so that when the big opportunities come, you can step back, become the thinker apart from your own thoughts, the feeler apart from your own feelings, the actor apart from your own actions, and go, ah, here's my power person dynamic. Now I'm going to breathe. I'm going to cancel my goal for my power person to cherish me, honor me, and I'm going to let this process through. Big stuff.
Mm-hmm. So I mentioned that I just, you know, like looked through the power person worksheet, but I know I have
right.
done worksheets on, they've been related to my power person, but it's not, you know, multiple different scenarios.
Right.
How can you kind of like describe, like what is the, well, I don't know. I would imagine that going through the power person worksheet will be more pinpoint straight towards the issue, or are they sort of kind of waiting? You can, if you do enough,
well,
you can get to it.
Yeah. When you do the power person, you know, for me, the goal for me in creating the power person worksheet was to create a tool that assisted people in stepping back from their mind and being able to observe it. So you'll see that the questions on that sheet will help you to become the observer of what happened to you rather than functioning out of a non-being self that had it happen to them. So it's building conscious awareness and the ability to step apart and say to yourself, oh, yeah, gee, I could never do anything right for my power person. So now when that's active in me, what's the symptom of that? They said to Yeshua, how do you tell where somebody's at? He said, you look at their fruit. So what's the symptom of that going to look like? Oh, I'm under stress and I look at the people around me and they can't do anything right. If I can observe myself and recognize that my reality structure is showing me that somebody else is not capable of doing anything right, and that was a power person, that's the message my power person gave to me. I know that what my perception is constructed out of is that power person dynamic. And that's where I can go back and collapse my perception into those original experiences and stop playing out that I have to make everybody wrong in order to be true to my power person.
Okay. So like when I'm doing like a worksheet, on the subject and the situation, and I'm thinking through like what my emotions are and my thoughts are, as I'm doing it, I actually am like reliving the situation again. I'm going into more depth. And then as I get down to the part of the worksheet where I'm releasing it, I there's actually, at least the way that I'm doing, I'm doing kind of an older, sort of an older version, but also a mixture of all these versions. Kind of,
right.
It's
oh, that's
definitely
cool.
Your understanding. So I'm going back through and essentially I'm going back through and I'm becoming the observer twice, because I'm going back through and I'm rereading it and I'm releasing it as I read it.
Right.
So then sometimes I'll expand upon it. And so that's when I'm kind of becoming the observer. And if you're doing the power person worksheet itself and going through it, is it the same type of process, or is it pretty much that
yes.
I'm the observer the whole time?
Well, for me, it's developing the ability to be the observer is what happens. And it will tend to change as you do the power person worksheet. It will tend to change the way you do the worksheet, the forgiveness worksheet itself, because you'll have developed more of that skill. And it'll be easier to spot your own patterns. And by the way, the show is going to cut us off in a few seconds. We won't do the outro. We'll just go ahead. Does that fit and make sense for you, that question or that answer, that idea?
Yeah, I think so.
So you'll
I think
tend
so.
To become more capable of.
Okay. So, like, it'd be important to go ahead and do a power person worksheet now as opposed to going through and doing more worksheets?
Well, you know, the answer is always all of the above. I'd listen to my guidance. You know, in you is the real teacher, and that teacher will tell you what your highest guidance is. So ask, you know, what's my next step here? What what do I need to move through next? And as you listen, you'll get the guidance.
Okay.
And, you know, a circumstance where you get one answer today, you may have exactly the same circumstance tomorrow, and the answer will be the opposite. It's always, it's live. What's the live energy have to do in order for healing to occur? And if we don't get to complete this, you know, let's start the show out tomorrow and continue the conversation so we'll get every refinement we can.
Okay, thank you.
All right.